1600 fossil fuel lobbyists who are moving around, who have made this space ineffective. That's what we have to challenge. We cannot discard the space.
But do you think the fossil fuel lobbyists should be banned?
Absolutely. Like we did in our fight against tobacco. WHO did not allow the tobacco industry to have a seat at the table. Why are we allowing the fossil fuel lobbyists to negotiate? It's like inviting arsonists to tell us how to put out the fire.
Well, speaking of fires, yes, this place is just recovering from a fire yesterday where everyone was evacuated. We'll be broadcasting from New York on Monday, leaving Belém, Brazil, where we are today. Harjeet Singh, want to thank you for being with us. Strategic advisor to the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty. That does it for our show. Special thanks to our local AP crew here at COP30 in Belém.
Hi, my name's Luke, and I'm the technical director.
Carlos Vargas, AP producer.
Hello, I'm Jules, and I'm cameraman on this fantastic show.
I'm Diego, AP camera.
Hey, my name is Pablo, and I'm doing sound and technical support.
And special thanks also to Taser Mrs. Oliveira Fernandes. And to our Democracy Now! Belén team, Tarina Nadura, Nermeen Sheikh Maria, Inez Terracena, Sam Alkoff, and Dennis Moynihan. And to our New York team, Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nicole Salazar, Sarah Nasser, Tay Marie Astudio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Masood, Safwat Nazal, our Executive Director, Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman. Special thanks to Nermeen Sheikh.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Are you ever listening to a new pop song or reminiscing over an old, well-loved album? And you catch a melody or a lick that reminds you of a different album altogether? Next thing you know, you're reading about the profound influence of synthesizers on rock and roll? Well then join me, Katie Zip, for Double Groove, a genre-bending show where we'll take a deep dive into an album, exploring the influences, history, and take a few quirky turns, all for maximum enjoyment and understanding of the music we love. Every second Friday of the month, 8 to 10 p.m., it's Double Groove with Katie Zip, only on your community radio station, KBOO, on 90.7 FM.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is our Friday talk radio show, Genius Box. Very excited to be here with you today. I'm Althea.
I'm Eliza.
And I'm Reed.
Okay. We're all here. We've assembled an incredible team to take you through some local goings on.
We're in
to
the big Genius Box today.
Yeah, the big box today. We added a compartment so that all three of us could fit. How are you guys doing? What's new?
I'm doing great. It's a perfectly crisp, chilly autumn morning. Love to ride my bike over to the station, and here I am. It's delightful.
And Reed made it just in time, by the way.
Yeah, I was racing over, bitter at the cold, my hands seared by the freezing cold.
Uh-huh.
So I guess we had different experiences, Eliza.
Well, I think that's kind of the point of Genius Box, is to really encompass all experiences
the
in
dialectic.
The cold.
Yeah.
We're in the box, so that
and
helps.
It's chilly.
Yeah. My part of the box is incredibly cold.
You could turn the fan off.
We have the fan competing against the heating unit. That's in Eliza's side.
I've been trying to drown Reed out with the fan going, but it's not working. He
can't keep me down.
Loud. He talks pretty loud. Well, let's get into kind of what we're going to talk about today. You wanted to start with the whale, Eliza. I'm putting that on you.
I mean, it's a big issue.
It's a whale of a story.
It's mm-hmm.
It's going to be really hard to not do puns. I apologize.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, a whale was beached in around Yahats, I believe, on November 15th. And a bunch of organizations came together to try to rehome the whale back into the ocean, but it just became an impossible feat. And so they ended up euthanizing the whale just to put it out of its misery. And that was the really only way out of this gigantic mess. I thought that this story just was incredibly symbolic of the times that we're in, where we have these gigantic hurdles and these huge problems that feel insurmountable, and yet people are still coming together to try to solve them. And even when something doesn't happen in the way that you want it to, when it's not successful, that was like not a successful moment. The goal was to rehome the whale, and that did not happen. Like all these organizations still came together and worked together to try to get this goal solved, or to try to get this problem solved and reach a goal. And I just think that that's like really emblematic of like what we should all continue to do, is like continue to energize and still move forward and still try to, you know, create a better society regardless of what that outcome might be, despite your efforts. And I feel like that's a good way to start the morning.
I like it. I like it.
Positive tinge.
Sometimes you try to move the whale, but you can't do it by yourself.
Or even with a lot of people.
Ultimately, you cannot. Just fundamentally can't move the whale.
It was 26 feet long. I mean, like, that's pretty big.
It is pretty big.
I'm not that tall, so. Or
no?
Long. No.
Oh.
Some might think I am.
Yeah.
But I'm not.
Coming virtually. At a healthy 24 feet.
I don't want to self-aggrandize or nothing.
Right.
There was another story out on the coast we wanted to touch on as well.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of related.
It's on the coast.
Because
it's on the coast.
Yeah. Totally related because of geography. The town of Newport on the coast has chased off the possibility of an ICE facility being built at their airport for now.
For now.
Asterisk for now.
For now.
But yeah, huge local backlash. If folks weren't following this story, there was this Texas subcontractor, right? Texas subcontractor was inquiring about using space at the airport, and there were, none of this was transparently said even to like local county officials, state government, any of this. But we're making these inquiries about that space, and the U.S. Coast Guard was moved out of the space, which is also like a point of contention. And then the contractor was making all these inquiries, and they're like, yeah, so like how much sewage could we be running through here? And say, for example, we were, you know, keeping people here. Would the sewage be able, like they're making all of these sort of like obtuse, I don't know, inquiries, I guess, that indicated that, you know, this contractor that's worked with the feds elsewhere might be trying to get an ICE facility on the Oregon coast. And, you know, huge, huge local backlash to that. They don't
overwhelming.
Want it. Overwhelming. Turns out ICE facilities not that popular with local communities.
No.
I mean, you're really on it today.
Yeah, I'm coming in with some quips. Sorry, the brain's still
frozen from your ride over.
Thawing. That's what I was going for.
So it's still frozen. I think.
So yeah, it's still frozen. Work, that's fine. It's fine. You're allowed to be frozen.
The whale of the problem in Newport has been returned to sea.
For now.
Yeah, I think it's
to potentially beach again.
With any of this stuff, it's just, you can't declare victory, you know?
It's always moving, just kind of moving it towards the future for another time where it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, but yeah, shining a light on it, so to speak, does seem to make a difference.
You know? Yeah, public outcry does make a difference in you know, as we were talking, an issue that ultimately the federal government could just unilaterally make the decision to house the facility there. There theoretically is a avenue that they could pursue that would require no public comment, no sort of, but the fact that there is public outcry.
But there would still be a cost for them to do that.
There would certainly be a cost for them. Yeah. So I think it's important to sort of see how, you know, these actions are meaningful, even, you know, though the process itself theoretically doesn't allow for public feedback on it, doesn't allow for public input in it. It's not a democratic process in this case.
Yeah. The feds could act unilaterally, but then they'd be running it themselves, not off, like the subcontractor also doesn't want the heat.
Right.
You know, and yeah, I mean, we've seen it as well with, you know, ice watch across the country, mm-hmm. particularly in North Carolina, because ice is like doing some stuff there now. And did you see the video of ice agents getting chased through the woods by those people?
No.
No.
Yeah. They were getting chased, filmed and yelled at and chased through the woods.
Wow.
In North Carolina.
They know what they're doing is wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Ethically, morally. Evil. Anyway, also just wanted to flag the sort of other component of it, so which is that the feds moved the U.S. Coast Guard out of Newport, which is important because, you know, there's a lot of boat-related activities.
On the coast.
Crabbing, fishing happening out of Newport. Yes.
Now, they moved it to North Bend, which I'm realizing I have been confusing with North Plains, which is off the coast. North Bend is actually still on the coast, close to Coos Bay.
Right.
So maybe it's just a big plan, the part of the Kevin Manning plan to turn Coos Bay into the next major U.S. port.
I'll have to admit my own ignorance. I haven't heard about this.
You didn't hear about that? I think it was Kevin Manning, Oregon senator, talking about wanting to dig out, get the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to dig out Coos Bay to turn that into a major port to compete with the Port of Portland.
Oh, well,
I think it was
while I was on sabbatical.
Oh,
so I wasn't here.
It was a sabbatical story.
But yes, in July, Oregon lawmakers, this is an OPB headline I just found, send $100 million to Coos Bay channel dredging in preparation for shipping terminal.
I don't believe that money, did that actually go through?
Well, I'm skimming
I
right
don't
now.
Think
you're, the
it
one that,
did.
You're the one that knows.
You brought it up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me just call up my local state senator.
Call Kevin. He's on the line.
Kev, what's up? Did we get that money or what? Well, that I didn't
did
know
we?
About that.
Yeah.
I don't know that I have anything to say about making Coos Bay an international shipping terminal. I couldn't tell you if that's a
good
idea.
I would say probably
not.
Environmentally, that the idea of dredging up the ocean floor is probably a fraught.
Sure.
Eliza, I'm turning to you on this issue because it could be that it's like a good way of aerating the soil.
Mixing the water column.
Mixing
the
water column.
Moving the nutrients up to the top.
Probably there's a lot of, exactly. Fish and various
it's
sea
good,
life
actually.
That are on the bottom that want to get up to the top, but they're just...
They're stuck.
And that's famously what happens in the ocean.
They've been stuck for a really long time. Yeah. And
free!
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's good actually to dredge the ocean and everything, and to make room for more industry.
Mm.
That's what has been reflected back to us by the environment time and time again.
They might build a big coral reef there. Do you ever think about that?
Excuse me, no, I haven't.
Big tourist. Yeah, it's a big tourist attraction in other places. So. I think I've put one in.
Yeah. I did. Okay.
They need a subcontractor for that, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Slight tangent.
Bunch of rebar.
They have been putting retired New York City subway trains off the coast as like man-made coral reefs to like help reestablish the environment out there. So there is.
Someone's using public transit.
Stand clear of the closing doors.
Well, there are fish in the way. I don't know.
Do you think they're reenacting the classic 1970s film, The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, The Fish?
That's a really obtuse reference. Me personally, maybe other. Oh, no, Nate got it. Nate, the engineer, has given you a thumbs up on that one.
Yeah, Nate's giving me a big thumbs up.
All right.
For a famous representative of common knowledge.
All right. Let's not drag. Let's not.
No. Well, actually, no. Just movie knowledge. Well, he knows plenty of stuff. Sorry, Nate. You can't defend yourself.
Yeah,
right. Well, you could get on mic and defend
yourself. Nate famously does not have any platform to sort of compete in this. Yeah.
No, he's not allowed. I pulled the cords before we started.
If anything, it was a comment to his esoteric knowledge of movie trivia. Let's
That's
be
true.
Clear.
That's
I was
true.
Not trying to dunk on him.
Well.
Yeah.
It was an offhanded dunk. It was a backhanded dunk.
Whoa. Okay.
Yep. Ooh, off the backhand.
Yeah, we got the court in the genius box. Actually, more of a genius court.
That's why it's so cold.
We're
outside today.
No, we can't be. We have to be in the box, Eliza. Keep with the fiction, please.
No, but I've bored a hole in the ceiling, and now we're looking out at the beautiful, crisp air, and it's flooding in along with some residual water on from the roof that's dripping down.
Well, you have to be careful because if you cut too much of the roof out, then it's a genius crate, not a genius box.
But there's a beautiful net that's blocking the view.
Oh, sure.
That's kind of acting as a lid that we can continue to dunk into.
Thank you. Yeah. That's
basketball.
Right. We are the net.
We are the net. Totally. Love that. Thanks,
What's
guys.
A box but a net?
You know, the original, not to get out on tangents, but I believe that the original basketball net was a big basketball box.
Peach
they'd
basket.
Shoot into, and Peach then they would box. Have to come up and then get the ball out of the,
yeah, climb the
basket.
Pole.
I just don't believe that.
No, it's true.
Really?
Yeah.
Or like popular sport in New Zealand, Australia, that's netball, where there's no backboard. Hmm. I think they got like an arcane or like a archaic set of rules of basketball and started implementing it. And then someone came over who knew the modern version of basketball, and they were like, why are you playing without a backboard? And they said, what? We're playing basketball. They're like,
No, this isn't basketball. It's a netball.
Just looking at two things. Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that. Thank you for educating me.
Yeah. Little sports corner.
Sports corner. And
in the box.
And we need to cordon off the sports corner. People don't like sports corner. We can't be spending too much time on that.
Yeah. So who are your picks?
No picks.
Cardinals. All the way.
Cardinals.
Mm. I don't know.
Said a bird.
They're on the brain. We were talking about them yesterday.
Okay. Should we get into kind of our main issue of the day that we wanted to discuss?
Oh, yeah.
Let's dive in. Portland City Council approved, at long last, by the way, we've been talking about it for like 7 months, the ban on AI algorithm-informed rental price fixing software, which is a mouthful, and even after all this time, we haven't really figured out how to make that easier to say, but it passed.
Woo! Dun 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 dun. And it was supported by everyone.
And that's not true.
Oh,
but
that's not true.
Unanimous support.
Well, two people weren't there, so we don't even know where they
were.
Okay,
we don't even know where they, yeah, exactly. On vacation or something.
Right. This was a bit of a kerfuffle, if I could say.
Ooh.
So the hearing, right? They
a hullabaloo.
Like a hullabaloo, thank you. They had amended it at last week's meeting, and then at this week's meeting, it kind of opened up with Councillor Dan Ryan giving this sort of speech about how, because he
violin.
The sad, folly in here sad, is really good.
It is to our ears. I hope it is to everybody at home. He gave this sort of speech where, if you didn't know the context, it would have been kind of confusing. But basically, earlier this week, he's anti price fixing. He likes
pro price fixing.
Which price fixing is already illegal, but whatever.
Well, because
you can still like something that's illegal.
They could fix prices to make it extra cheap for renters. Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah,
that's what you're preventing.
You're preventing. That's true.
They could come together with their hands crossed. They could say, "What if we made things?
What if we solved the housing crisis?"
All?
Cigar?
Gentlemen to affordability.
Cat on the lap.
Yeah. Herr Bond, what you do not realize is I have already set prices so low that everyone can afford it.
Okay,
well, maybe Ryan has a point then. But anyway, he made this Instagram post earlier this week dunking on it, basically. Like, he doesn't approve. But he called it, he referenced the policy as part of the, quote, National Socialist Playbook, which...
That's to history buffs.
To history buffs raised a couple of alarm bells. This is how you would say it if you were really equivocating.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, to some people, that could indicate that is...
Now, for him, he's meaning that it's part of a larger, broader, American-wide...
Sure.
Playbook.
Definitely not international.
Not international. Of people that identify as socialist or socially progressive.
Right.
That's maybe in a good faith assumption.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Dan Ryan is saying. And instead of saying it in all those words, he said, why don't I just shorten it down to a nice pithy way of talking about these people? National Socialist.
Which yeah. history has abbreviated now, to...
Now, unfortunately...
Nazis.
There is a famous National Socialist team that history has looked unkindly on. Yeah,
not so famous that Dan Ryan didn't know.
Yeah. Well, of course, because everyone knows them by their abbreviation.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, all of the counselors that have been pushing for this were like, hey, why did you call us Nazis? That's really like not cool. What the hell, man?
Yeah. Famously not ever really a compliment unless among
that group
of people.
if you're not seeking that out, you know.
Yeah.
Please don't lump me in with them. Good Lord. Yeah.
And to be clear,
sure.
The National Socialists, now I'm not much of a history buff, but they famously were supportive of renters' rights, and this is also in reference to the proposed impact fees assessed on detention facilities. Nazis famously pro-renter and also
anti-Gestapo.
Yeah. You know,
hate the Gestapo.
They had the Gestapo, but they said, you know,
they didn't like it.
They famously didn't like it, and were trying to put some restrictions on it.
So
that's what they're famous for.
So
right.
Right.
So at the top of the meeting, right, Ryan is like giving a speech about this, and he doesn't necessarily apologize for saying, I'm sorry that I called you guys Nazis. It was inadvertent. Like I personally believe that he's like, well, I switched the words around. I meant socialist, national, not national socialist.
Democratic,
whatever way
America.
You want to say it. Yeah. Okay. So.
I mean, and he can be critical of it, right? But he doesn't like apologize for saying like, and you know what? My bad. I totally get how that would be upsetting to hear from someone you have to go to work with every day.
Right.
That I posted on social media calling you a Nazi. That's not what I meant. Mm. He didn't really say that. He was like, anybody who knows me knows that I would never say that. And we just flipped the word. I flipped the words around and like, come on, you know. So it was more about like, how dare you get mad at me for something that
it's
I said.
It's not as if calling someone a Nazi could potentially put them at, you know, liability of some sort of defamation or.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
But this is like, you know, it's contentious, but like Ryan is really the main one standing out against the AI rental price fixing ban, saying that he thinks it's going to be bad for affordability, that it's going to scare off developers. But also, is this even a problem in Portland? How do we know? Like, this seems like it's for somewhere else. It's not for here.
Well, I guess he and Olivia, just to be clear, he and Olivia Clark
were the nose.
They were the nose.
Clark was not especially vocal at this meeting. And it's funny that he would say that it has nothing to do with us, because that very morning, Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield announced a settlement with this mass property management landlord firm called Graystar, who were using, allegedly, RealPage, which is one of these AI price-fixing softwares, to inflate rents. It's part of a multi-state lawsuit, which we're now getting a settlement from, if the judge approves it. So it was like, immediately, that is something that's happening here in Oregon with the way that that's going. And, you know, it's just, it's gotten...
But that might be, because that's all of Oregon, so you don't know if that's really like Portland's. Maybe Portland's, because I'm not really familiar. I don't really know if Portland has much of a housing issue, if that's much of like a big menu item for us. So that could just be applying to everywhere else.
Yeah.
But... Portland.
We
are in a bubble.
You're in a bit of a box or bubble. Yeah, right.
Portland's in a bubble. We're in the box.
Right.
Let's
clear that up. I pulled a clip from Councillor Jamie Dunphy's remarks before the vote that I would love to play for you right now. Hit it.
1,400 families, roommates, children, and people who have been failed by this economy are facing the worst, scariest moments of their lives every month. And we are living in a system that has failed our most vulnerable. If you are only going to build housing in our community because you want unfettered access to abusing renters and milking every dollar out of the people in my community, I will do everything in my power to cost you money, to waste your time, and to prevent you from hurting my neighbors. It is not hard to be a good landlord. To the corporate apologists in this city, to the lobbyists, and to the delusional members of our community who believe that they are one or two good bootlicking moves away from becoming a millionaire themselves, and to the disappointing minority of my colleagues on this council, it is a moment for you to look within and to search why you are doing this work, who you serve, and what the hell it is we're doing here. The Oregon Attorney General just announced a settlement with the price-fixing companies who only exist to abuse the most vulnerable in our community. I will save my colleagues a pedantic rant about my anti-corporate positions. I do not support Walmart. I do not support Live Nation. I do not support Uber and Lyft and Airbnb or any out-of-state corporate scum who want to actively work to undermine my community. I am eager to pass this policy. I am worked up right now, and I will always vote for people over corporations and unfettered profit. I'm grateful that this fight has continued. And I am grateful that this fight has exposed bare who we are. As my colleague Councillor Smith has said repeatedly, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. Let's vote on this and move on with the next fight. Thank you.
That was Councillor Jamie Dunphy speaking at Wednesday's City Council meeting.
I'm also worked up.
I was dancing a little bit.
I was really doing the finger points up in the air, like, yes, yes, let's go. I feel like that really encapsulated my feelings about the AI price fixing algorithm, where it's just this tool that landlords can continue to use, or that landlords can use to continue to just make everything more expensive and harder to live in a city.
Which is already illegal.
Exactly. It's, you know, we already have like Live Nation coming in to the Lloyd Center. Target has like moved out of like Southeast for the most part, but it's still on like Mall 205. And these big box stores, generally, I don't know. I'm going on a tangent. Sorry. Trying to reel it in. I'm really worked up.
They're all using the same monopolistic practices, and they've all gotten to do it for the longest time.
Exactly. And it's watering down like the culture of a city where we deserve to live in a place that is affordable, both the thing that keeps us housed, whether that's an apartment or a house or whatever you live in, and the things that we buy should also be affordable for basic needs and necessities, and the things that we, you know, go to as citizens of that place, like for arts and culture and music and restaurants, those should also be affordable. Living should be affordable. And that is the base argument here. And with Dan Ryan and just being so vehemently against this, you know, potential capitalistic tool that might help out this city, we just don't know. Why don't we try it out? I don't think that's ever worked. I think it's just those sneaky little tools have just continued to make things worse and less affordable and more expensive and pushing people out of society or out of cities and further away from each other. Yeah, I too am very, very worked up. And I really appreciated him saying just two bootlicks away from, and you know,
the center of the bootlick
the pop. Center of the bootlick pop, the center of the billionaire pop, as one might say, also, you know, one, two, and now I'm rich, and that's unfortunately not the way that it happens, but yeah, those are my thoughts.
What do you think, Reed?
Yeah, pretty much ditto. It is still, you know, it's shocking to think that there could be pushback to, again, software that enables illegal activity. And I get that you know, the RealPage spokesperson said, well, you know, you can it doesn't necessarily mean that they're just going to be inflating prices. You can, it's just a way to sort of like engineer a price in any direction. And it's just kind of, you know, it's something, it's just a tool in the tool belt of, you know, real estate developers, manage real estate property management teams. And you know, we don't want to deny them that right. Mm-hmm. It's their First Amendment right to be able to access.
access this
information. I mean, it's really like it's really removing any of the actual dimensions at play of you know, housing as an asset that, you know, property management groups have a, you know, an interest in trying to dredge every last cent out of, and for those that for the few of us that rely on housing as a fundamental basis of living, for whom, you know, these cents are cents that we rely on for, you know, our livelihood, and not speculative investments, right, that we are.
There was also, we were talking about this yesterday, Reed, the statistic is like half of people in Portland are renters.
Right.
Yeah. That's pretty much the case across Oregon. I think that's, it's Portland is not any different from most Oregon cities in that regard.
And, yeah. And I mean, the language, like they did a lot to tweak the language of it so that they would hopefully, likely not get sued the way that Berkeley, California is getting sued. They tweaked it so that if you have less than 5 units, it doesn't apply to you, mm-hmm. which it already kind of doesn't apply to you because you have to have a lot more units under your control than that to even use RealPage. Like, they won't talk to you. I've talked to people trying to like do research and be like, well, what does that site actually look like? And they won't talk to you unless you can like give them a bunch of addresses.
Wow.
But also, you know, like they did all this work to try to not get sued and also work to keep some of the big players in this field out of the fight. Like Zillow, for example, mm-hmm. was like, okay, the new revisions, that clearly doesn't apply to us. We're not worried about Portland City Council legislating around Zillow. You know, like there's like large entities who've stepped back and said, okay, this doesn't infringe upon us. And it is like RealPage and Graystar that are, you know, at the receiving end of this.
To be clear, now officially, well, I guess pending criminals in the eyes of the federal government. And
well, yeah, the the case against RealPage, I think, is still
okay,
ongoing.
Okay, maybe not criminals. I should say engaged in criminal.
Liable. I don't know.
Alleged.
Messing with the people, man. I am thinking that maybe we should take a quick little musical break before we open the phones up. Does that sound okay to you guys?
That sounds fine.
Yeah,
whatever.
I need to cool off.
What do you mean, whatever?
Whatever.
Can you act like you want to be here?
All I'm saying is I've been playing music with my mouth this whole time. And it's a little cruel to, you know, to just say now we're turning to the music.
Okay,
as if
a
what
different
I
form
doing
of music.
Yeah, thank you.
Is that better for
thank you?
Thank you.
Yeah.
We need to really warm you up. You're yeah, still icy.
Sorry. I guess my heart was also cold. I was about to say coldened.
Wear another layer.
So this is why I would say that we should take a little musical break so that we can sort of get our words back. You're listening to Genius Box on KBOO Radio. We're going to hear a tune, and then we're going to come back and talk to you, okay? So stay with us.
Slept on the banks, on the leaves of a banyan tree, and all of these spirit voices rule the night. Some stories are magical, meant to be sung, songs from the mouth of the river when the world was young, and all of these spirit voices. Fevers and the broken cabin wall, and all of these spirit voices. Sing rain water, sea water, river water, holy water, wrap this child in mercy, give her heaven's only daughter. All of these spirit voices rule the night.
And we're back. It's Genius Box here on KB Radio. I'm Althea.
I'm Eliza.
I'm Reed. I'm back.
Oh, he's better.
I've warmed up.
We perked him up. He was saying whatever during our little musical break with some
now
spirit
I'm cooking.
Voices, Paul Simon. And
yeah, it was the Paul Simon.
It was the Paul Simon. It was the spirit voices,
no, it was
fundamentally.
Not.
Are you a Paul Simon hater? Sorry, not to derail.
Nope. I'm not gonna go there.
Oh.
Whoa.
I'm interested, but for later.
But maybe this is an off air conversation.
I'm interested later.
Okay.
Great. Not now.
Well, we're opening
not
up.
Not interested now. I'll be interested.
Oh, no, he's
in a
going
bit.
Back into the whatever phase.
Oh, no.
Yeah. We're opening up the phone lines inspired by the non-apology that Dan Ryan gave for calling his coworkers Nazis. We're curious to know about the. You know, what makes a good apology to you? Have you ever gotten a meaningful apology? Have you given an apology that you were like, nailed it, nailed it, we're friends again?
Have you never given an apology?
Have That'd you never, awesome. Yeah, if you're one of those people.
Have you given a worse
maybe
apology
never,
than Dan
never
Ryan?
Done something wrong.
Yeah. Call in, please, 503-231-8187. You can also message us on the KB website, click on that chat with us button, and we'll see it, and we'll talk about it. So, Eliza.
Yes.
Critique Dan Ryan's apology. Mm. Where did he go wrong?
I'm rubbing my hands together because I'm getting ready.
He forgot to say sorry and make a little puppy dog eyes.
Oopsie. So
did I do that?
I definitely didn't mean to. Impact over intent, people. So the in Dan Ryan's statement, he also said something to the effect of my fellow counselors misinterpreted my statement, and I have to work with these people who I'm politically not aligned with, and turning something that he said incorrectly onto a misinterpreted statement is essentially victim blaming, where you're telling the person that says "ouch" that they're actually in the wrong. And that is bananas to me. And it can end up being very dangerous. And a proper apology looks like I made this mistake. This is the action that I made. I see how it hurt you in this way. I am sorry. It's a simple three-stepper, a quite easy dance move. And instead, Dan Ryan took like 16 different steps to avoid that, and instead just not take any accountability. And I just think that that's really outlandish and kind of not okay for a public figure to do who represents a city.
Right. I would also posit, and it's good to remember this, a good apology doesn't actually cost you anything.
Mm.
I think that there's feelings like, oh, I'm losing face, or like it's a blow to my ego to have to apologize for something. It's like you didn't mean to do it. You know you didn't have malice. You know, like, and you can't make somebody accept that you're not at fault, but you can like own that it had an impact on them.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when it's like, in this case, for when we're talking about city council, it's like your coworkers, people you have to work with, people you're trying to get things done with, like to have a relationship that's conducive to the type of productivity you expect from a city council, that's kind of very important.
I'd say like, especially when you are not politically aligned with your fellow coworkers who you're all working politically together.
Right.
You need to be able to disagree in a respectful way that allows for mistakes, that makes gigantic room for mistakes, that allows for apology, because there will be, you know, you can't totally separate the personal from the professional. There are going to be big feelings around certain policies that are being made because people feel strongly about the way that cities are run and the way that they're impacting their community. And so there will be misspeaking and there will be misunderstandings, and to in good faith take accountability for those mistakes and for other people to have good faith that you are taking accountability is crucial to getting things done, which is the point.
Yeah, totally. We have Sierra on the line. Hi, Sierra. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Well, morning. Talk to us. Morning. You're on Genius Box. Tell us about apologies. What do you think?
Okay. Well, I personally feel like I give great apologies, but I wanted to talk about how I feel like I encounter this in my romantic relationship a lot. Like, when my girlfriend is apologizing to me, she, or like, not just her, but like, often people will give reasons to why they did what they did. And for some reason, it just bothers me so much because I feel like they're giving excuses. And I feel like a good apology is just like owning up to what you did and just like apologizing and like giving reasons like why you won't do it again, like, but not necessarily giving reasons why you did it, unless like the person asked.
Yeah, I think that's where people get tripped up, is like, on those reasons, you know. A lot of the time of like, well, here's all of like the, here's the world that I was living in that led me to do this. I think sometimes to me that can be helpful, but you have to acknowledge that that's not like the case.
What I meant to say was socialist national playbook.
Yeah. I was living in a world where I wasn't calling you a Nazi, and that was my, and that's my bad.
I was calling
you
more of a Sina.
Which is different meaningfully. Right. So you're good at apologies, Sierra.
Yeah, I'm amazing.
How?
What do you? What? What's your? Yeah. What are your steps? Teach us your ways.
I think I just like take accountability for what I did and like give concrete steps of how I'm going to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Mm. That's important. I think
whatever I'm apologizing for.
Yeah, I think the follow through is a lot more important than like the explanation of how you came to that mistake. That's more like personal work that you need to do, and then like, but what you need to show the other person so that they can, you know, feel safe around you or whatever, is to say like, you know, hey, these are the things that I'm going to do. Like Dan Ryan, hey, I'm going to take a civics class and like learn about the National Socialist Party.
Sure.
Right.
I think also like getting curious about how somebody was hurt, you know, because I feel like probably people, I definitely have received apologies where it's like someone can tell something's off with me, but they haven't asked what I'm upset about. And so then they're like kind of blanket apologizing, or they're just like, well, it seems like you're mad, so I'm sorry. It's like, well, you didn't even get curious about like what hurt me that you did. And so now I'm the jerk for not accepting your apology, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It puts you in a weird position. Well, Sierra, thank you so much for calling. You are listening to Genius Box on KBOO Radio. If you would like to call in, we're talking apologies. What makes a good apology? Have you gotten a great apology? Are you giving great apologies? Tell us. 503-231-8187. You can also message us on the website, kboo.fm.
You can also do something really mean to us, and then you can apologize to us live on air.
Oh!
I don't know about all that.
Or you can ask us to do something really mean to you, and then we'll apologize.
Yes. We've got a list of insults.
Reed is in a spirited mood this morning, so I think it'll be coming from him.
I've got the crazed, bedeviled eyes.
He's got a cold heart.
He said it.
It's a cold heart. No, it's thawing.
It's thawing. So
whatever.
It's going to be that
lukewarm.
Mean.
Lukewarm heart. Jeff is on the line. Morning, Jeff. How are you?
Morning, Jeff.
Good morning, my favorite genii. There's three of you. It's almost like H2O. two hydrogens, and then there's that oxygen.
Oh,
who's who? You don't have to get into it.
I mean no offense by that, and I will not apologize. The trick is, indeed, to never do, in the first place, something for which you need to apologize. Hmm. And the classic apology comes from our politician friends, mostly in Washington, D.C., who stand before their colleagues and say, I'm sorry if anyone was offended, but...
Mm.
And the trick simply is to live in such a way that you never have to apologize for something you've done.
Mm.
That seems like a hard thing to do, because I want to do stuff, and it is possible that somebody could get mad at me for that at any time.
Right.
Well, that's the difficulty.
It is hard. But you mentioned something there, Jeff, the I'm sorry if.
I'm sorry if anyone was offended. That's a classic line.
You can't use the word if in an apology. You just
of course
can't.
You can't, and they're not really apologies.
Absolutely.
These are humans. Oh, these pesky humans. Back to your box. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks, you, Jeff.
Bye, Jeff.
Appreciate you.
I'm sorry that you feel this way. It's still pushing the blame on the other person.
Yeah.
That, like, you being hurt by anything that I've done is your problem. And that's just simply
distancing the onus of understanding. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And Althea, I just wanted to circle back to the way that you said getting curious about why the person is hurt. The person that's hurt deserves all the attention in the apology.
Mm-hmm.
And when, you know, you are making excuses or saying, oh, I'm sorry that you're mad, you're distancing yourself from understanding that your actions had an impact on another person. And you're just like trying to kind of bat it away and like get away from being a bad person for making a mistake, because we're taught that if you make a mistake, you're a bad person.
Right.
And instead, mistakes are made all the time, and you're not a bad person for making a mistake. You're a bad person if you don't apologize correctly.
Whoa.
Just kidding. That's not true also, because you can make a mistake in your apologies as well. Just try to do better. Do better.
You're allowed.
Yeah.
Inevitably, you will make mistakes. Inevitably, you will hurt people. You're a human interacting with other humans.
Yep.
And you have to apologize sometimes.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. Folks, if you want to call in, we're talking apologies, 503-231-8187. You can also message us on the KBOO website. Have you gotten a great apology? Have you given a great apology? Have you gotten a really bad apology that made things worse? You could tell us that too.
Could a bad apology make things better? I don't know.
I don't know. And that's a use case we'd love to hear from you about. If that is something that you are interested in telling us here on Genius Box. We've got EJ on the line. Hi, EJ. Good morning.
Hey.
Good morning, everybody. I just wanted to say with the current administration, it's don't apologize. Don't ever apologize. Double down. And it's just deny, and go that route. Or, you know, turn it like you guys have been talking about, that, you know, I'm sorry you're such a jerk, or I'm sorry you're so ignorant that you thought that, you know, whatever. And the success that you see with these politicians and administration, a lot of people aren't apologizing for their actions. No matter what they are, and I think that's the downfall. A bad apology or a mediocre apology is better than being on the offense, but their playbook, I think, is dictating how people in general are acting.
I really like, I'm sorry you're such a jerk. I think that's really, I think that's a good mug statement. And I totally agree that, like, there's this kind of cultural shift into, you know, avoiding apologies at all and avoiding taking accountability for mistakes or hurting other people at all. Because that's just, if you're admitting to a mistake, then, you know, that you're admitting to being wrong. And how could you ever be wrong when you're perfect?
Yeah, true.
That's how I feel. No. Hey, thanks a lot. And you guys sound great.
Thanks, EJ.
Appreciate it. One thing, what EJ and what you were saying, Eliza, earlier reminded me of is it's part of what is a good apology is like using, this is also good writing advice, active voice, not passive voice.
Love it.
You know, I'm sorry that you were hurt. If you were hurt, I'm sorry if you felt that way.
Mm-hmm.
No, it needs to be like an I statement, you know.
Right.
I'm sorry I hurt you. I didn't mean to do that, but I see that I did. And what I said was mean. And you didn't deserve that.
Get that verb closer to the subject.
So true. Sorry, I just wanted to get the writing advice in there too, guys.
It works. It works on a lot of different levels.
It does. It does. We've got Tawasi on the line. Hi, Tawasi.
Morning, Tawasi.
Good morning. You know, I think a good apology has to be rooted in truth. We have all of these examples of apologies that are not heartfelt or are just subterfuge for a lack of empathy. And, you know, the real apologies that are the most meaningful are honest. So, you know, when you hear an apology, for instance, from Dan Ryan, you know he's just a lying sack of baloney. So his apology isn't heartfelt. It's not rooted in the truth. I had an experience with another politician that did a very dishonorable and horrible thing. And their apology was just... you know, it didn't hold any weight because the act was so horrific that without concrete action behind the apology, it just felt like empty platitudes. So it was just November 20th, and for a lot of us, it's a heavily traumatic date because of the Backwater Bridge. If you know what the Backwater Bridge is, great. Otherwise, it's the day when, in freezing temperature, the North Dakota National Guard turned, along with Bismarck Fire Department, the Morton County Sheriff's Department, they turned fire hoses on water protectors in North Dakota. So, you know, I have a lot of trauma around what happened at Standing Rock, and part of it is the politicians, because they made these empty apologies and it just didn't mean anything. So, you know, we had a very beautiful Cobb kindergarten school built with like radiant heat. It's just like the most beautiful building you can imagine. We had like this fantastic kitchen and, you know, a whole camp of yurts and teepees and, you know, just every kind of structure, including sacred prayer sweat lodges. And it got bulldozed to the ground on the word of Dave Archambault, who was the Standing Rock chairman at the time. And later he apologized, but, you know, when you bulldoze a school to the ground, it's hard to apologize afterwards and make everything all right. So you have to have truth in a good apology, and not just truth, but like you've been saying, you have to follow it up with concrete actions to show that, you know, you're sorry, that you're actually sorry. And I feel like that kind of restorative justice does more to improve a community than incarceration. You know, if we shifted to an apology-based justice system, we would have better outcomes, because it creates a situation where the person develops empathy with their victim because they have to root their apology in sincere understanding. So I'll let you guys go, but you know, when you're apologizing, make sure that you're being very, very honest, because if you're not dealing directly with the truth, then your apology comes across as insincere.
Thank you, Tawasi.
Thank you, Tawasi.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate that. One thing that makes me think of, sometimes you want a conflict to be over, but you're not ready to apologize yet. I've certainly had this, like, interpersonally, probably at work too, where I don't want to fight anymore. I want to, but I'm still harboring some feeling of that I've been wronged in some way, or like, right, you shouldn't even be mad at me about this. I didn't do anything, mm-hmm, you know? And excuse me, I think that's not a great place, kind of, as you know, it's tangentially from what Tawasi was saying, not a great place to apologize from. Like, right, you kind of have to get clear in yourself about what you did and what happened before you can ask for someone's forgiveness, and also recognize that you might not get it. Mm. I think that's the other thing, is like, you're looking for, if you're looking for absolution from somebody or some entity, or like you have to like be willing that they don't get it, that they don't, mm-hmm, give it to you.
Right.
And the apology in that case is for you. It's like to clear it from your plate, like, hey, I did this thing. I know it hurt you. I don't want to do that anymore. And I'm really sorry that that happened. And I'm going to do these things differently next time. You don't have to accept the, mm-hmm, apology, right, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of an expression of vulnerability, I guess, in that way.
And we can't be afraid of that, you know? Because it does foster stronger relationships, ultimately.
Unless we're afraid of what it stands for, you know, as Tawasi's saying.
Right. Hmm. Never.
of facing the truth and putting yourself in a position where you are fundamentally, while you might not, you can't expect forgiveness from the other person, you are kind of putting yourself at the mercy of the other person to provide you with forgiveness or to reciprocate. Or it's kind of, yeah, it is like it's a acknowledgement that like should have some kind of, you can't just like use an apology as a evasive tactic to get out of like what you've done to another person,
or just to get out of bad feelings.
Get out of bad feelings,
right?
Yeah,
you have to work through those.
Yeah,
it can. Yeah, you can kind of knee jerk reactions like, "Well, I'm sorry, okay,
right.
Everybody, stop talking to me."
Instead of like, "I need a minute. Hold on a second.
I need to go process my own feelings and then apologize." Josh is on the line. Josh, we got just a couple minutes left, but we'd love to hear what you have to say.
Hi. Well, first, I would appreciate it if you would apologize for not opening up the phone lines sooner. I'm half joking.
Well, it has to come from truth, as Tawasi said. Mm.
And unfortunately, that was just the structure of the show. Yep. So,
okay. So right there, I want to note that you're avoiding accountability. You're using passive voice.
That was Eliza for the other.
Let him say. Let him speak.
to say, we set up the structure of the show in this way so that et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not hearing much accountability there. I'm hearing an avoiding of accountability.
Yep.
From you asked for people to do this.
Who are holding the reins of power? I might add. Mm. Right. We as callers don't have the power. You as the show host and engineer, you do have the power. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, all that needs to be said about that. I want to piggyback off of what I was just saying, and piggyback off of what Tawasi and Jeff said, to point out that I've been noticing in culture in general, in mainstream culture, and I think this is maybe another opportunity to apologize, is a conflating, a gradual conflating of people who hold political reins of power as being ordinary people with feelings too. Mm. And, you know, it's sort of like, okay, you know, we're coworkers, and my coworker said this to me, and now my feelings are hurt, or this other, you know, stakeholder who also has a lot of power or does or whatever, you know, and we're people too, and our feelings are, and I feel like it's just all performative, right? And so it's kind of this like spectrum, like slippery slope of going from the very personal, like how, you know, like you're talking about apology, like, okay, the first caller, Sierra, she talked about her girlfriend. Okay. Right now, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm imagining that and interpreting that Sierra and her girlfriend are not people who are, more than working class, that they don't hold any positions of authoritative power over other people, right? They're ordinary, you know, working class people. That is worlds away from politicians making statements in public who, you know, literally hold our lives in their hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
true. I don't think we should be mixing these two up at all. And I think it's very dangerous to do that. And it conditions people to think about political power in the wrong, entirely wrong ways. Now, when you're in a relationship with someone, I also want to talk about the danger of...
Josh, I am sorry to pause you right there. We are going to have to wrap things up. We got another show coming up next. And I realize that this is kind of a great demonstration of what Josh was talking about. One thing I want to say...
Silence, Josh.
Yeah, I'm so sorry that you feel bad about that.
But, you know, I think part of the acknowledgement of harm is also related to the power structure. Mm-hmm. And yeah, obviously as a politician, you need to also acknowledge that going around calling people Nazis when you have the kind of platform you have is also part of that. Right. So that's the kind of conversation that we had today. I want to thank everybody for calling. Thank you, Eliza. Thank you, Reed.
Thank you, Althea.
Thank you, Nate.
Thank you, Nate. I just want to say the views and opinions expressed by Eliza are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of Genius Box LLC.
We haven't incorporated yet, but, you know, it's coming.
I got shade. It's fine.
Veterans Voice is next, so stay tuned, guys. Have a good weekend. Goodbye from Genius Box.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You are listening to KBOO.
I'm Jude.
And I'm Jude.
We are part of the KBOO Youth Collective.
And on